Cindy Chubak was divorced at 27 and single for more than a decade. During that time, she won 3 Golden Globes and 2 Emmys for her work as a writer and producer on Sex and the City. And Cindy, like Carrie Bradshaw, was on the hunt for Mr. Big. She met Ian in her late 30s. He was a bad boy, a bad bet, and without the aura of money and power that made Mr. Big so attractive. So she begged her colleagues not to let her fall for him. But I guess you can tell from the title of her latest book, The Longest Date, Life as a Wife, they were not successful. It's published by Viking. Very pleased it has brought her to our show today. Hello.
Hi.
How old were you when you got married the first time?
I think I was 25.
Mm-hmm. And where had you met him?
I met him in New York.
Uh-huh. And why did you divorce?
He realized he was gay.
But he asked you not to tell people at the time.
Yeah. At first, he wasn't sure he was gay. He thought he might be gay, and he thought he should figure it out. And I was kind of wishing he had figured it out before we got married.
Yeah.
But he wanted to figure it out, and he wasn't ready to come out. And so we just had to tell people. It was right before my 10-year reunion, and we went and pretended everything was fine. It's actually the basis of a moth. I told the story for The Moth about this that's on my website at cindyshubak.com. But it was quite it felt like the end of my life. I mean, I thought I was married and going to have kids and – you know, like any divorce, whether it's because someone realizes they're gay or some other reason, it felt very final and sad.
Well, people who are know all about The Moth will remember that there was an elderly couple who were your former landlords. They were devastated by the split. Did you feel a sense of personal failure when that marriage failed, or did you feel victimized by it?
I felt a failure. I didn't feel victimized. I was kind of maybe in denial, but I was very codependent. I guess I helped him look for an apartment. I bought a book about coming out to help him. I was very sympathetic to what he was going through and probably not as in tune with what I was going through.
But you also, I'm sure, were asking yourself, why didn't I see all the signs?
Yeah, and there were signs. You know, there he did help me look for my wedding dress, and I don't know. He liked antique shop. There were probably signs, and I could talk to him about anything. He was a really delightful man and a good friend, and you know,
it sounds like sounds like a plot line for one of the Sex in the City store shows.
I did actually write an episode for Charlotte, an episode called Evolution, where she dates Dan Fetterman, and she's trying to figure out if he's gay or straight because she thinks he's gay, and then he kisses her, and she's very confused.
Did that marriage change the qualities you looked for in a man?
Well, at first, after we divorced, I probably dated just, you know, Neanderthals that watched football and drank beer and, you know, I had nothing in common with just because it was reassuring they were completely straight.
By the way, there are a lot of gay men who like football.
True. So. Not to generalize. And I, it's true. I think what happened was, I just, as much as he didn't know who he was yet, clearly, either did I, really. I was still pretty young, and it took many years of dating and looking and really thinking about what I wanted and who I was.
Were you already divorced when you went to work on Sex and the City?
Yes.
Did you identify with Carrie Bradshaw or with Candace Bushnell, for that matter?
I did. I mean, I grew up in Oklahoma, so I didn't feel as stylish or fabulous as those women. And when I first read Candace's book, I felt like, well, I don't know. I had lived in New York right out of college, and I used to, like, usher at theaters so I could see the plays. I was living in this falling-apart apartment. I thought, this world doesn't exist. And then I got on Sex and the City. I was like, oh, it existed. I wasn't invited to these parties before. So Candace's book, I thought, was this kind of beautiful but glossy world that I didn't understand. And then the show, but the friendships, and there were things in the book that I loved in her social satire, and but I just wasn't sure I would be able to write that because I wasn't sure I knew that. But then the show, I think really the girls I joined in the second season, they had so much heart and soul, and they were 34. I was 34 when I joined the show. I related very much to what they were going through and the issues, and are so universal.
Did you, like Carrie, have a posse of good friends? And did you want to buying a lot of shoes?
When I joined the show, I remember Pat Field, the costume designer, I think I wrote in some purse for Carrie. Now, this is no insult to Kate Spade, but I think I wrote in like she's Carrie's a Kate Spade purse. And Pat Field said, Carrie wouldn't carry a Kate Spade purse. Don't write a brand again. So I still shopped it.
Yeah, but Manola Blahnik must have really appreciated that show.
Yes, I learned about Manola Blahnik and Jimmy Choo and all those brands. And I grew to like Sarah Jessica. I mean, she sees designers as artists, and they are. And I finally, you know, sort of learned the difference. But when I joined, I knew nothing. But I did have a posse of girlfriends, and I, you know, that I understood that part.
Was writing on that show a way of healing, making the single life not just acceptable, but even enviable?
I think so. I feel like even when I joined, I was I felt the stigma being single still at 34 and having friends getting married and having kids already. And I, you know, felt the hurry to get married. And that show was so unapologetic. I kind of learned, I think I had a very self-deprecating sense of humor when I joined, and I learned to feel more empowered, and, you know, that all the jokes didn't have to be at my own expense or at the women's expense, that these women owned who they were, and they owned their sexuality, and it was very freeing. And I feel like as the world changed its perception of being single, so did I.
My guest is Cindy Chupac, who has won 3 Golden Globes and 2 Emmys for her work as a writer, producer of Sex and the City and Modern Family. And her previous book was a bestseller, the Between Boyfriends book. And now we have The Longest Date, Life as a Wife. It is published by Viking. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. And then you met Ian. How did you meet him? By the way, I hate that question when people ask me, how did you meet your wife?
Well, I met him, I wrote about it in the book a bit, but I met him through The Moth, through storytelling. I told a story one time at The Moth, and he used to go, he was a lawyer and hated his corporate law job in New York, but he would change clothes in the cab and tell at Moth story slams. And I met him at one, and he kind of, we went out for a drink, and what I wrote in the book, and which is true, I was somewhere between a slump and a decision. I had had a long, dry spell of nothing going on, and instead of just tossing in the towel and buying a caftan and some cats, I thought, I'm not going to sleep with someone now until I'm in love. I'm going to make this mean something. And then I met Ian, had a little too much to drink, slept with him, and the next morning woke up and thought, I haven't done that in a while because I was supposed to be in love. Oh, my God, I fell off the wagon.
And then he tried to warn you off.
Oh, yes. He told me he would break my heart and that he was trouble and he wasn't looking for a relationship. And it was all true. And I was like, okay. And I thought, I'm going to keep dating other people and this will just be a fling. And I did tell my friends, it was the girls I write with at Sex and the City. I said, you know, don't let me fall for this guy. But they met him and they liked him and they said, we're off the case. We like him.
Well, can two good storytellers coexist? Shouldn't one of the partners at least be a listener?
That would be helpful. It's funny. I find the storytelling part, I think I talk about it a little in the book, but being a storyteller and then being with someone who starts to tell your stories, like when we're out or when we're traveling and he'll start telling things not the way I would tell it. He's giving away the ending. He's embellishing. He's making me sound. I didn't
anyway,
say that.
It's your story.
Yeah. But it's his story too, so I have to learn to live with that.
One of the things you say that Ian has that you appreciate is that he has good women friends. Isn't that always a positive indicator of good potential in a man?
It would be if he hadn't slept with all of them at one point.
Did they try to bring you together?
There was one female friend that he didn't sleep with who was dating a friend of his. And I remember when she met me, she said, Ian, you better not mess this up. She really liked me, and she kind of gave me the seal of approval.
Well, the first time he came back to your apartment with you, you felt that you had to warn him that it's a nice place. Were you worried that he might be intimidated?
Yeah, I guess that sounds horrible, but I, you know, when you're at a, I just lived in a nice West Village apartment, and I don't know. It sounds horrible to me now when I hear that. But I do remember thinking, like, it's going to scare guys off because I'm just completely self-sufficient. I have this nice place. And I just thought I'd warn him. And he was like, my place is nice, too.
Yeah, but there is that problem when you are successful and you earn more, especially, unfortunately, it's still the case in male-female relationships.
Yeah, Ian jokes that when he...
Men sometimes feel intimidated.
Yeah. I think... Ian wasn't, but I was, yeah, maybe used to guys who were. He jokes that when he woke up, it was a two-level apartment, and he was like, well, either she's doing well or I'm in Jersey.
In one chapter, you say that even after you got married, you kind of saw him as a house guest.
Yes. I still do sometimes. We had a big disagreement about house guests because he was used to sleeping on people's couches and he liked to travel and stay with friends and he liked everyone to be able to crash at his place. And I had always written in my house. So I just, it was kind of my sanctuary. And then I realized, I think I still see him as a house guest. That's the problem. I already feel like I have a house guest.
And then you got a dog. Had you had a dog before?
You know, growing up, I had a beagle, but I hadn't had a dog in a long time. And when I met Ian, he wanted a dog, and it seemed very romantic, a boyfriend with a dog. But then we got married, and I thought we should wait, try to have a child first, then have a dog. But he got very impatient about the dog, and it's a big part of the book because he talked me into a Saint Bernard.
Of all breeds, that is one that doesn't immediately come to mind for an apartment dog.
We were back in L.A. at the time, so we had a little more room, but it doesn't come to mind as a beach dog either. It doesn't come to mind as a dog that I would, that someone who hasn't had a dog in a long time should own, but, and I, it was a big adjustment, but I grew, of course, to love Tink. Tinkerbell. He named her.
How did he propose?
He proposed, this is so funny coming from the bad boy that he was, but he... dressed as a knight in rented armor and was on a white horse and surprised me at the beach at sunset.
He rented a white horse as well?
Yeah, the horse had credits because it was L.A., so the horse had been on Will and Grace.
And then, but then he had to wind up in New York where the weather is not as, well, as we know right now, isn't always as pleasant as it can be in L.A., although we don't have a water shortage.
Yes, there's much to recommend.
But we do have four seasons.
Yeah, and this one is a rough one. You know, we met in New York, and then he moved to L.A. to be with me. And when he moved to L.A., he was taking the bar for L.A., and that's when he proposed right after that.
Now, there's a whole matter of the fantasy of marriage. When people get married, I would think that 99% of them all believe this is it. This is going to be forever. Then problems arise.
Right. And I guess problems arise if you think this isn't going to be forever from the get-go, right? But yeah, I wanted to write this book because I felt like there was a lot that people had said that I had said about dating that was very comforting when you're single, you know, people commiserating and laughing about it and sharing stories. And then you get married and everybody kind of closes ranks and there's a, because of discretion or loyalty, feel they shouldn't talk about it. And I felt like that's why it was blindsiding me a little bit, these, how big these adjustments felt, even if they seem mundane, these adjustments of having someone living in my house and getting an animal together and making decisions and sharing my stories. And
are you thinking of marriage as just a long date?
I do. And I don't know if it's a good, sometimes it's a good one, sometimes it's a bad one, but it is. I think there's something romantic. You know, every once in a while we joke like, wow, this has been a long date. And one time I said to Ian, when will I see you again? He goes, tomorrow. It's sort of that every day you're on this date together and it's a long one.
Well, you have an exceptionally honest chapter in here where you go through your thought process when Ian makes an idle remark like, I'd like to build a cabin in the woods where I could keep a horse.
Yes. I wrote a chapter.
Did you think, have I married a Martian here?
Well, that chapter is about when you make more than your husband. That was one of the more difficult challenges I set out for myself. Like, can I honestly write about my feelings of being the bigger wage earner without sounding horrible? And, you know, the roles have changed, I think, for men and women. And I love Ian because he brings so much to the table. But a lot of that is not... or was not, especially in the beginning, financial. And so, yeah, when he said things like that, I thought, I'm not buying you a horse.
Well, you were writing also for a time a sex advice column for Oprah's magazine, O. Was money a big issue in the letters you received?
From women, not necessarily. There wasn't something. People
mostly were, men are selfish, and I am so nice.
Yeah, and it was kind of a sex and relationship column. It was mostly sex, like how do we spice this up, or what if, you know, can I?
And were you the ideal person to give that kind of advice?
I don't think so, but they put a tagline on my column that said, "Have no sexual fear. Cindy Shupak is here." It was horrifying because we were trying to have a baby at the time, and sex was becoming really fraught with failure, and you know, it was like it was not the best time to be writing a sex column.
And you shouldn't have asked him what he would like to see change in your life to liven up your sex life. I'm not sure you want to tell us that on the air.
You can read the chapter about, yes, the money chapter. Be careful asking questions you're not sure you want the answer to. That's what I would say in a marriage. Honesty is not necessarily the best policy.
Well, did you, you've used your life, your real life, as subject matter for Sex and the City, also for Modern Family?
Yes.
And what about haven't you sold this to Fox?
Yeah, I'm adapting it's funny to adapt the book. Usually what I do is I take stories from my life and put them in a show, like Sex and the City was just a great place for all your best and worst dating stories.
Well, how does that work? You're in the middle of a bad situation, and you have to deal with it. At the same time, in the back of your head, you're thinking, wait, I should really start thinking about how this might be adapted to an episode?
Yeah, it's hopefully, you know, that's why at the end of Sex and the City, we did those episodes where she leaves her computer and tries to live her life and not write about it. And I will say that when Ian proposed to me on a horse dressed as a knight, I was kind of glad I wasn't still in Sex and the City, because I thought we would dissect this and decide this is corny or weird, or, you know, there's a point where I wanted to stop dissecting and writing about and just living. Although Ian did, his foot got stuck in the stirrup because his horse ran for a while and I had to help him off the horse, and I could still hear myself as sort of riding Carrie saying, yes, he rescued me, but I had to help him off his high horse. But yes, I think there's a part of me that always is thinking this would be a good story. And when I was dating and the stakes were lower, even though they seemed so high, but they were lower because you could just have a bad date, and it was already comforting to think, tomorrow morning I'm going to tell the girls I work with and Michael Patrick King, we're going to laugh about it and it'll be a great episode. And when you're married, sometimes it takes, I'd say, the tragedy to comedy equation is a little longer. You need a little more time.
And you write about some pretty unhappy moments here. Could you have written this book if you didn't have a happy ending?
Well, you know, I wrote it while we were still in the middle of it. I guess the unhappy moments.
Or rocky, I should say.
Yeah, it was our baby quest. It was much more trying than I was prepared for. And I guess marrying at 40, I should have been prepared, but I, you know, just was concentrating on finding the guy.
So you've written a couple of books and you're still writing for television. What do you think of yourself as? Just a writer?
Yeah, I think of myself as a writer, because I feel like it's all related. Like I said, stories that I go through, I put into shows or make movies out of, or maybe tell a story. This book to me...
Well, The Moth?
Yeah, The Moth. And there's a lot of storytelling venues in L.A. now. And I just did one last night here, Sunday Night Sex Talks. This kind of book, this is really close to my heart because it feels very personal. And I feel like I wanted to share something with women and men that celebrated marriage, but also talked about it really honestly and with humor, and also the baby quest made it accessible.
Cindy Chupak's book, Chupack, is The Longest Date, Life as a Wife. It's published by Viking. Thank you so much for being on our show.
Thank you.